We live in a world where anger is often expressed. How do you react when you are given poor service by someone? Maybe a traffic jam, someone has cut you off. How do you react when something breaks? It might be mechanical and causes you some inconvenience, especially a car or something in the home. A lot of times you have computer problems. I have a computer problem. His name's Connor. Was walking around with a flash drive around his neck the other day. I don't know if I had found that one yet or not. But they have close to 40 years worth of sermons on those things. Back in the holiday season, I remember we were in the Kohl's department store. And we were in a line. I don't know, the line might have grown to maybe 15, 20 people. And I remember a little old lady walking in the door. And she walked up to the first cashier there at Kohl's. And people, they just almost went ballistic about the fact, oh, that lady, she's cutting a line. I can't believe that lady, she's cutting a line. Doesn't she know the line's back here? We need to tell her to get back in the back of the line. All she was doing, just asking where to return something. The people, a lot of times, they'll just go wild over the simplest things. Where did we learn to respond like that? Where did we learn to respond in that way? The Bible talks about when you become a child of God, about the fact of unlearning some behavior. And Ephesians, Norman's going to be dealing with the church at Ephesus. Interesting church. He says in verse 2 and 3 of chapter 2, in which you once walked, according to the course of this world, according to the prince of power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the flesh of our lust, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. Then he goes on to say in chapter 4 and in verses 1 and 2, to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bearing one another in love. So the church at Ephesus, they needed to unlearn some behavior. When Peter, when he writes to Bithynia and the areas thereabout that the Apostle Paul wasn't allowed to go to when he was received the Macedonian call. You all talked about that sometime back in the book of Acts. Well, Peter went and he worked in that area and rode in that area, and it tells them that there is some behavior that they needed to unlearn when you become a child of God. He says, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold, but from the aimless conduct received by the tradition from your fathers. Maybe we pick up anger in the home. Maybe we'll learn anger from mom or dad. Maybe from others. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and in verse 2 and 3 it says that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men before the will of God. Then he says in verse 3, for we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles. So there is some behavior. There's some behavior that you can unlearn as you become a child of God. The outline is one that's very simple today. The description of anger we'll talk about. We'll talk for a moment about righteous anger with Jesus Christ. Controlling behavior and then finally overcoming anger. So we'll go through this rather quickly and the lesson will be yours. First of all, anger. It's an emotion only. It's sort of like love, disappointment, being happy. But then what happens is it's going to motivate usually some type of action. It might be that of words that it motivates. It might be silence. You might get the silent treatment sometimes from somebody. Might be like Olive Garden yesterday, violence. We see that it can be expressed or it can be suppressed. In Leviticus, and in chapter 19, Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 18, Leviticus 19 and verse 18, he says in verse 18, and you shall not take vengeance. That's the express side of this, taking vengeance. Nor shall you bear a grudge against people. And that's the suppressed side of anger. You're either going to take vengeance many times or you're going to hold a grudge against somebody when it comes to anger. We see in James and in chapter 1 and in verse 20. James 1 and in verse 20. James 1 in verse 20, it says, for the anger of God does not achieve, or the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So it influences judgment, usually poorly. It can be connected with sinful speech. Most often that occurs. It can be connected with other emotions, hatred, jealousy, or it can harm other people. It's associated with foolish behavior and bad consequences. We see in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and in verse 9, he says, do not hasten in your spirit to be anger, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. In Proverbs 19, verse 19, it says, a man of great wrath, another word for anger, will suffer punishment. For if you rescue him, you will have to do it again. And most of the time, these things are caused by events that just don't go the way that people want them to go. So because of that, they get angry. Righteous anger. Be angry and sin not. We see in Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 26. We see that Jesus was angry. He looked around with anger and grieved at the hardness of their heart. He knew their hearts. He cleansed the temple, but he waited. He went back the next day. He didn't do it that Sunday. A lot of people think he did it that Sunday, but he actually went back in Mark. Well, let's turn over and read it. In Mark, the 11th chapter, when he rides in the triumphant entry into Jerusalem, it says in verse 11, Jesus entered into Jerusalem, came into the temple. After looking around at everything, he left for Bethany with the 12, since it was already late. And then on the next day, he came back and he ran the money changers out of the temple. He didn't do it in a fit of rage. He waited. He thought about it, what he was going to do. He pronounced woes on the scribes and the Pharisees. But when we look at Ephesians chapter 4, not only do we see verse 26, be angry and sin not, but also we have to reconcile other parts of the context with that. In Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 31, Ephesians 4 and in verse 31, it says in verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. So how do we reconcile that with verse 26? Be angry and sin not. Well, in Psalm 4, where this verse quotation actually comes from, in Psalm 4 and in verse 4, it gives us some idea about this. Psalm 4 and in verse 4, it says, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. The idea is, before that night falls, you be at peace. Be still and turn that over to God. He says as well in James 1 verse 20, so then my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Well, Jesus' anger. He knew the hearts of men in Mark chapter 3 and in verse 5. He knew what they were thinking about. His actions and words were never out of control. He wasn't angry at the wrong done to him. In Isaiah chapter 53 and in verse 9 it says, he was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 23 it says, he was reviled and did not revile in return. He suffered and did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. He died for those who caused his anger at different times. Yet he did not sin. In fact, if we could have a test for righteous anger, what would that test be? A lot of people say, well, I tell you why, I just have righteous anger. I hear that from people sometimes. What would a test be for righteous anger? Well, one is it based on assuming the best motives for the person? Is it driven by a spiritual concern for other people? Not my own hurt, not my own disappointment, but the spiritual concern of other people. Are we grieving for the unrighteous in others? And are we trying to remedy the unrighteousness in their lives? Are actions in control? Are they intended for good? And are we ready to suffer for those in the wrong. Controlling anger. I've seen this at different times to where you've been called to different places. Maybe it's two family members and they're involved in just a knockdown, drag-out fight. It might be a husband and wife. It might be in-law. It could be anybody. And they'll be fighting back and forth. I just can't believe that you would do something like that. And then the other one would talk about it, and they would just spew things out of their mouth back and forth because they cannot control their anger. And then it happens. The phone rings, they're so angry, and they say, "Hello?" It's just a call for anger. Yet people tell me all the time, I just have a problem. I just have a problem controlling my anger. And Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 31, 32, this is the International Version. It says, "Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind, compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ and God forgave you." Controlling cursing. "But now you yourselves are to put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth." I could be wrong, but I really think people enjoy that. You hear that so much in society, especially when you're out in society so much, like many of you all are. And you hear this just on a day-to-day basis. And I think there's just a lot of people that really like the fact of being angry and cursing. They just enjoy that. They take pleasure in that. But as a child of God, you have to control that and you have to change that in your life. It might be verbal. It might be a verbal attack. Just the idea of insulting people. The idea here. James chapter 3, verse 9. "With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brethren, these things not ought to be so." And maybe it's taking revenge against somebody. He says, "Beloved, do not avenge yourself, but rather give place to wrath." That's wrath of God. "For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." Any unkindness? "Let all bitterness, wrath, clamor, evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind to one another." You control your anger. Even that of holding a grudge. I've seen people that have held grudges. I've met people that have held grudges for 50, maybe 60 years sometimes against somebody else. "You should not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." In Matthew 5 and in verse 21 through 24, Matthew 5 and in verse 21 through 24, this is the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 21 through 24. It says, "You have heard the ancients were told, 'You shall not commit murder,' And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And everyone who says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into fiery hell. In verse 23, it says, therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Some people believe in that, well, only outward actions matter. Maybe I don't get physical with the person. I don't hit the person. So it's all right. But Jesus is talking about the action within your heart as well, as to how you treat someone else. Or maybe that we're only accountable to human judgment. No, we're accountable to God as well. And it's not just a negative command. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to reconcile. That's what Jesus is saying. We're trying to reconcile two people that have a problem with each other. Oh, especially with the Jew and the Gentile later on, as Paul deals with that in 2 Corinthians, as he deals with that at the latter part of the book of Acts, about reconciling people back together. And that's a challenge we have when people are angry. How do we fix the underlying problems? We think about it, as we saw back in Psalm 4. You think about it, you meditate on it, and you give it over to God. In chapter 7 and in verse 3 of Matthew, chapter 7, verse 3, it says, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? In chapter 5 and in verse 23 again, chapter 5, verse 23 again, he says in verse 23, therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering before the altar and go, and first be reconciled to your brother. You need to forgive. We learn the value of other things. When we were traveling to North Carolina, there was always a traffic jam somewhere between Asheville and Winston-Salem. They were always working on the road every time. And there was a sign that would always flash. It would say, get over in the left lane. Right lane will be closing in 2 miles. Another flash, right lane going to be closing in 1 mile. Right lane is going to be closing in 1/2 mile. And you'd be obedient and you'd get over. And all of a sudden there, people, they drive up beside you. And they look at you like, when are you going to let me over? And maybe you're mad. Oh, I'll tell you what. I've been sitting in this line now for over 2 miles. Being obedient to the traffic laws, and now you want me to let you over? And you get mad when they get over in front of you. It's always interesting when they get over behind you. You don't mind as much. You just sort of let that slide off your back a little bit that they're getting over then. But when they cross over in front of you, sometimes that's very aggravating to you. But is that important in the big scheme of things? Is that really something to lose your soul over? that you get so angry at all these small things. He says the world is passing away in the lust thereof. After he talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. We're men. We're in God's image. We don't want to cause anyone to stumble. He says better for him that a millstone were hung around his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. So we just learn the true value of things. What's really important as far as your soul is concerned. And these other things which really just don't amount to anything. Attain contentment by trusting God. There's going to be wars. There's going to be fights that are going to come through unfulfilled desires. Going to need to manage expectation that life is like a vapor. It appears for a little while, then vanishes away. He says in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 and 6, be content with such things that you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not flee. What can man do to me? And last verse for today, and thank you for your attention. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23 and 24. To remember Christ. When we think about anger, we think about all the things that are happening to us. Remember Christ, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sin, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. That's our example. Oh, there's some behavior that you have to unlearn when you become a child of God. We would encourage you this morning, if you need to respond to the gospel in any way, so getting ready to sing, let him in. We'd encourage you right now to come while together we stand.